That would leave a total of 8 systems to be dealt with and replaced in the following biennium, 2009-11. So again, it's sort of 19 that would be replaced by the supplemental, 39 that would be replaced by this particular request, and then 8 that we would replace at the next biennium with your approval. The sum total of this is that this package would allow the governor's office to get back to a place where a regular life cycle approach that frankly is put into practice for the rest of state government can be reapplied to the governor's office. Software upgrades included, I mean, all of that stuff obviously included.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crumbin.
Thank you. Chip, you said that 19 systems in a supplemental budget, is that the one that went through the e-board?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crumbin, no, I believe that actually came through your subcommittee in a broader request.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, actually it was in Natural Resources Subcommittee. It just passed full the Friday before this passed.
Well, and that begs two questions, Mr. Chair. Why is there a supplemental budget going through a different subcommittee than this one, other than I guess maybe that's the co-chair's choice? The other question is, it's my understanding that there was some e-board action relative to the governor's technology package during the interim, and there were something like 40 or 60 systems that were approved at that time. What happened to that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there was no e-board for the governor's office with respect to technology. I don't remember the governor's office even having anything before the emergency board this last interim. So,
okay.
I believe the request came to, we discussed a supplemental, and the supplemental with respect to your other question as to why not this subcommittee. There were other agencies, a lot of them natural resource, I believe, that were.
It was a laundry list of agency things that were in this. The chair had some heartburn expressed to the Ways and Means co-chairs, and was assured that this was kosher and an okay way to do business, whereupon the chair did vote to approve the supplemental. Not that the chair's vote is to in any way influence the value of what have you of any bill. That's not what the implication is here, Representative. It's merely that it was the last year's budget, they put a number of these requests all together, and they came through as one. The bill went to Ways and Means sub on Natural Resource because there was more activity there that related to the natural resource agencies than to, like, our agency.
Okay. Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
So, Chip, there were 19 in the supplemental and then 39 that are part of this request. But what your thing here says is 62 systems. That 19 and 39 adds up to 58. And then you said all but 8. That, I've never been a math wizard. But 58 and 8 does not equal 62. And so I'm trying to figure out where you're coming up with the 62.
Oh. Going to get an arithmetic either explanation or work session here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crumbin, your math is correct. Linda, do you mind actually explaining?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Crumbin, I'm Linda Ames with Budget and Management Division. He just misspoke with the 39. there will actually be 19 in the supplemental that will be done this biennium, 35 that will be done in two pieces next biennium, one, you know, a section each year, so that that will help to put us onto a regular schedule, and then the 8 remaining. And that's just the, you know, the PC computers. In all of this, there are a few printers that will go along with that.
And detail. The detail, Mr. Chair, Representative Crumble, the detail for this particular request is actually the second page in the appendices. So you'll see up above 62 desktop systems, 39 need immediate replacement, 19 with supplemental request, 20 in the POP, another 15 to be replaced in 07-09, and then the 8 systems remaining. So I apologize. That was my miscommunication.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
And so, yeah, I got this. This will put you back on a life cycle of how long, did you say, per system?
I think 4 years.
Yeah. If, Mr. Chair, Representative Crumble, the standard life cycle, which we understand to be 4 years, every 4 years.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Are you working with, is the governor's office working with the IRMD or the successor to IRMD with regards to getting these installed and how that's going to coordinate with other offices?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crumble, yes. Yes, we are.
And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
How many total systems does the governor's office have?
Oh, okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Crumble, 62 is the total.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
So that's one workstation per employee in the governor's office?
No. Mr. Chair, Representative Crumble, not quite.
Okay.
Okay. Moving to page or slide 22, which is package 104, policy support. This is a request for a policy area around economic development to be housed within the governor's office. Quite simply, it would add two positions or two FTE to the governor's office, one policy advisor and one support staff. And I think the explanation of this is rather interesting. Governor's office houses policy advisors in a sort of a broad range of issue areas, education, workforce development, health care, public safety, etc. But prior to last year, there was no advisor specifically dedicated to the issue of economic development, which meant that virtually all the policy sort of development that did occur came from either ancillary policy advisors in other areas that tangentially touched upon economic development or agencies themselves. The governor has been committed to elevating the issue of economic development in the state of Oregon to a much, much higher degree and really is interested in, I think, a stronger level of coordination amongst agencies and between agencies and an elevated, perspective of economic development, not having to do just with sort of the traditional things that one might consider economic development, like retention of businesses or attraction of new businesses to the state, but expanding that further to take a look at how, for example, investments, policy investments in education, higher ed and K through 12 and even Head Start, for example, have an impact on economic development. How rural health care, for example, has an impact around economic development. And I think that the governor's perspective is that in terms of policy debates and discussions within the governor's office, that the economic development lens was previously sometimes missing or lacking, that it wasn't sort of put there front and center. And I think there's been a real intent upon the governor, by the governor, to really elevate that focus inside this this administration. It's really kind of fundamentally critical to have an economic development policy advisor, so that, in essence, the policies that are developed don't just become, singularly focused around one particular issue area, but that the broader impacts are understood and acknowledged. Right now, we have the good fortune of having Tim McCabe, who's currently filling this position. He was brought in initially as a loaned executive from PacifiCorp. In November of this past year, he was brought on full-time into the governor's office and now fills this position currently. He is providing, I think, a tremendous amount of expertise and resource for us, not only in terms of coordination of economic development activities from the governor's office, but also enhancing policy debates. So that is that particular package.
Okay. Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chip, is the general fund expenditure there, is that for an entire biennium, or is that phased in?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitson, my understanding is that's for the entire biennium.
Thank you.
Moving to slide 23, package 105, which is governor's travel. This is an enhancement travel budget, or it's an increase to the governor's travel budget that allows for additional flights, charter flights and commercial flights on a monthly basis. And really, sort of this past biennium, in retrospect, I think there has been some clear need, for lack of a better description, that the governor needs to be more accessible, and to do it by vehicle, by car, takes a tremendous amount of time and actually significant cost as well. And so there is, I think, a strong intent here on the part of the governor's office and the governor himself to really try and drive up this particular budget item so that he can be more accessible to the people of Oregon, and he can see firsthand some of the impacts that policies are having or some of the needs that are out there.
Tip, this is an enhancement.
Correct.
Is that correct? And I see Senator Johnson has a question. If you
not a question. I want to be the cheering section for this package. Having just come off the road trip for Ways and Means, along with you, Mr. Chair, and others at this dais, and coming from an aviation background, I just think the fact that the chief executive officer of this state, a nearly $50 billion enterprise, doesn't have access to an aircraft is shocking. I think our previous forays into having a governor's airplane available were mismanaged and not done well. But the governor needs to be as accessible to Pendleton as he is or she is to Portland. And these road trips, I mean, we were in Corvallis on Tuesday, Eugene on Wednesday, Bend on Thursday, Medford on Friday, Coos Bay on Saturday. Our chief executive officer, personalities notwithstanding, ought to have an airplane or ability to charter either commercial or for airports where there is not commercial service, ought to have access to chartered aircraft.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, and I certainly concur as a, on a personal basis, someone having in excess of 6,000 hours in the left seat of an airplane, a lot of it flying around Oregon, a lot of it flying around other places, I can certainly appreciate the economics of. I understand always that somehow flying to the public is looked at as conspicuous consumption. But if we look at the cost of, the governor spending the better part of 8-10 hours on I-5, 205, and 84 getting to Pendleton, along with the entourage that he has to, take with him because of the very nature of his office, an airplane is cheap at half the price, in my personal estimation. So I have nothing but support for this, and I agree with Senator Johnson. I'm somewhat baffled again by a $55 billion industry that does not have a corporate jet. I don't think you'll find many $55 billion industries in this country that do not have access to...
Or even a nice corporate turboprop, sir.
Even a nice corporate turboprop, would be... would be the main thing is a nice little airplane that's an all-weather airplane that they can come and go with that will expedite their functioning in their office. So I'm personally supportive too here. But before we get too much support given to you by the chair on this, let me go back and. This is an enhancement package, I'm told, from what the chief of staff said this morning, and therefore I'm inclined to believe, though it doesn't tell me in front of here, and I could ask LFO for this, but instead I'll ask the governor's staff, what's his existing budget?
Mr. Chair, I will tell you,
having all of the people in that row.
I also want to just take this opportunity, if I could, to recognize the person that's been not only whispering in my ear but handing me clearly cue cards as we've gone through this presentation these past several days. Jody Sherwood is the office administrator for the governor's office, and without her, none of this would be possible. And she really does a remarkable job. In answer to your question, the total in-state travel from the general fund for the 2005-2007 biennium was $190,061. That includes all staff in-state travel, with the exception of, and just note this, the statutory areas of the governor's budget, which would be the IRT, affirmative action, minority women and emerging small businesses, and arrest and return. So if you take those statutorily required areas out of the governor's office, the total budget for all staff, including the governor himself, $190,061 for 2005-2007.
So we are looking at, then, give or take some change, $350 for the 2009.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Unless there are other questions, please.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I do have a couple of questions. This adds up to what you've got here, adds up to $7,200, and that's per month?
You're anticipating? Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, those are per flight costs, as I understand it, just as an example. So on average, a commercial flight back and forth for staff and the governor and, the seats and so forth would be about $1,200 to those areas, roughly.
And
so that's charter flight that's is per flight as well, correct.
If I'm understanding, if I could, excuse me, Representative Crummell, in your charter flight, you're talking about not a round trip to Ontario. You're talking about Ontario to Joseph Dashiell and to Astoria to Roseburg, or what exactly is meant here?
So for each month, Mr. Chair, on a monthly average, if we added a charter and commercial flight per month, we would be adding $1,200 for a commercial flight and $5,500 for a charter flight on a per-month basis. and those are rough averages, including staff seating and so forth, to get to that $160,800.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I can't let general aviation get such a bad rap. You're talking about multiple flights for $5,000. I mean, you could. It's not going to cost you Salem to Astoria $5,000. You're asking to add this much additional charter capacity.
Correct.
Right.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I apologize if I misunderstood that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the point that I was trying to get to. I'm sorry, Representative Crummell.
No,
you're in the middle of your questions.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to have that clarified, because I was kind of wondering the same thing. Because, for example, to go from Salem to Ontario in, say, for example, a King Air is probably 2 hours.
In a King Air?
Yeah.
About an hour over and about an hour back.
Yeah. So, and if they're $1,500 an hour to put them in the air, which is probably about right, then you can eat up that $5,500 pretty darn fast. And that's the point that I wanted to get to. But I do have, I guess, a question for Senator Johnson. And I know we can't go back in time, and it doesn't really do us any good to anyway, but I think for understanding this package a little bit, several years ago when we decided as a legislative body to get rid of the King Airs that were owned by the state and take away the governor's ability to fly anywhere and that sort of thing, I didn't support that. And you've alluded to, you know, the mismanagement and that sort of thing. Is there a particular reason why we didn't correct the management instead of selling off the assets?
Can I quickly give you the version
of
that? Those aircraft were bought under what's called public use, which means they're ex-military aircraft that become available to the civilian sector for very little money. That's the allure. That's the seduction of getting public use aircraft. Public use aircraft are run under a whole different set of rules than, say, an air taxi. So we got these doggy public use aircraft and sent them out and had them fixed up at full boat retail. And so we had a huge amount of money in them, and they were being run out of the Office of State Police. My view is that was the wrong fit at the wrong time, and that assuming that we ever get enlightened enough to have the governor have an airplane, that it ought to be run at what are called Part 135 air taxi standards, where there is maintenance that's consistent, there's pilot training that's consistent. And as I understood it, state police approached the mission as it has to be a police officer, sworn officer, pilot in command. The mission was so fuzzy. Some of it was executive transport. Some of it was doing prisoners. We probably could have fixed the management problems, but the way that the aircraft came into the possession of the state had become such a muddle, and how they were maintained, that they had become an icon of needing to get rid of before we threw any more people off the health plan. The airplanes went out the door. The state, in my opinion, took a bath on that whole deal right from the start.
In other words, be careful of what looks like a good deal.
That's absolutely correct. And to carry the chief executive of this state, regardless of who it is, and his senior staff, I maintain that the plane has to be run to the same standards that an air taxi would be run, with the same pilot qualifications, the same maintenance standards. If we're going to run an airline for the governor, it has to be clear what the mission is, who rides in the airplane, how you maximize the use of the airplane or not. There'd be instances when the governor could go out and stay someplace in the airplane, deadhead back, but it has to be managed by competent aviation people who understand what they're doing.
And it wasn't.
In my opinion, it was not a good fit where it was, nor was it a good fit to be running public use aircraft. I don't know whether those aircraft ever had standard airworthiness certificates, but public use aircraft don't have to have standard airworthiness certificates. So it was not a very well conceived and executed plan, in my opinion.
Thank you for that background. That does help a lot. I have one other question, Mr. Chair. I know that after the
planes were sold and all of that kind of stuff, then there was a big to-do about how our chief executive was going to get around. So there was a motorhome that was gifted to the state in the first part of the current governor's or the governor's first term. And it was quite a unit, by the way. I was in it, not because I was traveling with the governor, but I was in it because it was at a show. And quite a unit. Whatever happened to that? Is that still being used, or is that something that has just sort of slid off the scale and gone into oblivion, never to be heard from again, and is now an asset that sits out at the...
parked next to the Zeppelin.
That's parked, yeah. That's parked at the airport for somebody else to take around one of these days.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I'm waiting for the note card to come over my shoulder at any moment. Now you tell me.
It's not appearing, right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that was never owned by the state. That was loaned to the executive, and it was kind of referred to sometimes as a mobile billboard. It had a number of advertisements or promotional things on it. It was viewed in some people's eyes as being somewhat tacky mode of transportation for the chief executive of the state. If I'm allowed to add a personal comment?
Well, of course.
I thought it was tacky. Anyway.
Actually, what I thought is somebody was out there really trying to campaign to get John Madden to come to Oregon to run for governor and knew that they'd have to have something like that to take him around the state in. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, those were all private dollars. I have not seen that motorhome.
Senator Witch.
Mr. Chair, actually, another question of our resident expert here. How often does a plane have to be used in order to warrant its ownership and staffing it? Or does it make sense for the state to own a plane and have that plane staffed? Or would it make more sense to have a qualified air taxi do it on a per-flight basis?
If I were Queen, there would be a list of available charters that met the minimum pilot qualifications and minimum insurance qualifications, and that would be a logical place to start this. Eventually, should the state own an airplane, perhaps, with all the attendant staffing, somebody would have to do an analysis. But many people find it quite efficacious to just have a company that they do charter with, and they're not responsible for the insurance or pilot retraining. I can tell you right now, we're just about to send a pilot off for annual retraining to the tune of $15,000 for 3 days. So there are huge costs involved in maintaining an airplane, and if we undertake maintaining an airplane as a state, we ought to do it right, and we ought to know what all the costs are, and we ought to do it to the same high standards that a corporate operator would do it. For our purposes right now, just having a stable of corporate operators where the chief executive, again, regardless of who it is, knows the pilots, has confidence in the pilots, knows the aircraft, and you could have four or five people be sort of on contract to deliver the service. It's obviously cheaper to get it at the airport of origin, which would be Salem. But I think giving the charter community in Oregon a crack at offering these services makes a certain degree of sense.
Senator Johnson, excuse my ignorance at the higher level of aviation here, but wouldn't the leaseback be a possible?
Leaseback would certainly be a possible
way where you would lease back to a firm,
sure,
that had these capabilities,
sure,
and therefore get more
bang for the bang,
more
for, the
bang
buck.
For the buck.
Absolutely. And, sir, now that I know that you are in possession of 6,000 hours, I defer to you as a much less senior pilot.
So,
okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, so is that something, then, that the governor's office, just out of curiosity, is contemplating putting out as an RFP or an RFQ? To actually have this stable available that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, that is a conversation that, while it is not in this presentation was not intended to. The governor is very eager to have that conversation, I believe, with you about the possibilities.
I expect with the governor's staff listening to, obviously, this conversation this morning, they've identified some of the places they need to go for support for beginning that conversation. But I would hope that they do. I think this is, this is probably an improvement over what we're doing now. But I don't think that's where we want to be in the long run in the state on this. And I think it needs very careful examination, both in terms of the dollars cost and also in terms of the demand and the need for the service. And again, it's a personal view on it, sort of thing. So,
Mr. Chair, we will go ahead and put together at least a rudimentary look at all those cost factors and sort of, you know, present that to all of you for your review as well.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to slide 24, which is Package 106, the Governor's Marketplace. If you recall, in the first day of our testimony, Lydia Muniz came from the Minority Women and Emerging Small Business to talk a little about some of the things that that particular group does. And this is seeking an increase in the limitation by $30,000 to fund, in essence, the Governor's Marketplace. Which is, in essence, an annual conference that we are giving strong consideration for moving to a quarterly basis around the state to provide a higher level of, a higher profile and a higher level of, higher ease of entry for these businesses so that they can really roll up the sleeves and understand better contracting opportunities. I think one of the things that we're finding is that in an annual conference located here in Salem, while it's very convenient for us, it's sometimes not as convenient for small business owners. And that I think the one gets a great opportunity to actually participate if you go where they are. And so that is the reason for this increase.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I really appreciate the fact that at all of our places this morning was the summary of minority-related activities in state government. And when you see it laid out as clearly as it is in this depiction, we've got 24 people engaged in activities that relate to women, minorities, and emerging businesses to the tune of $11.5 million. And I want to renew my request for some kind of an interim look-see at how we do these activities and what are the public's expectations. And while I like the idea of the governor's marketplace, I would certainly like to have it be part of a coherent plan for how we deal with minority and emerging and women-owned businesses. I mean, the fact that the governor has two activities in his office to the tune of more than $1 million. And again, I just want to go back to the question and say, what are we buying? Do minority contractors feel as though they're getting $11 million worth of bang for the buck in the state? I'm not quite sure how to pursue getting a task force pulled together to look at this with a plan and an expectation of what each of these undertakings, whether it's in the governor's office in two places or OECDD or DCBS, ODOT, or the advocacy commissions, do we have a plan that everybody has bought into and that we're executing on that addresses the question of minority contracting women and small businesses? And I just don't feel like we do. And I'm almost begging somebody to prove me wrong, but it seems for $11 million in investment, and I still have the minority contracting community calling and complaining to me that they feel like they're not getting well served with access to contracts, we're doing something wrong. And I want to elevate the discussion around this issue to something more than just every year we allocate some general fund and feel as though we've done a good job of addressing the need. I'd sure like to be able to say to somebody when they say, what's your plan for encouraging minority entrepreneurship, to say, here's the plan, and it's been worked across these agencies, and it isn't just the happenstance of a couple of people who sit down and have lunch once a month and talk to each other. I'd like a plan. And so when the Minority Contractors Association shows up, as they have written me with respect to ODOT's budget, expressing their dissatisfaction with available contracting, you can say, well, here's the plan, and here was your opportunity to be at the table to be part of developing it. So my enthusiasm for the Package 106 kind of hinges on a broader discussion of what are we doing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I think as we talked about earlier in the subcommittee, the governor is very interested in actually engaging in a broader conversation, I think, during the interim around these pieces. I would point out that the two activities within the governor's office are both statutorily assigned to the governor's office. In addition to that, not everything on this list is actually specifically related to contracting out. And I use the Advocacy Commission's office as sort of an example of that. Having said that, there is, I think, a direct correlation and correspondence amongst all of these entities here on this piece of paper in terms of enhancing the total. And I think that all of us would be very interested and I think well served by looking at a way to better manage and focus this and make sure that all the parts are working together. And that if we are missing any parts, that clearly we need to come back and have an analysis of that. So I think during the interim, we're very actually eager to have that conversation.
Well, and certainly to, Mr. Chair, certainly to have deliverables. There's going to be a debate in the Oregon Economic and Community Development budget about passing money through that the state has very little accountability for, that are... I forget all the acronyms, but the Hispanic Chamber and a Native American to encourage entrepreneurship in that community. And I would just like us to be able to document what hopefully would be a record of success. And instead, now it seems as though it's just handing out money, and at each level where the money gets touched, some administrative sticks. And at the end, I don't know if we've actually created minority business and opportunity by our investment, and that's my big look-see, and I've got to put some additional focus on trying to figure out a vehicle to get such a task force formed, and then we would know exactly, I mean, that the value of doing this. I know some of these trade shows are extraordinarily valuable, where contacts are made and relationships formed, and people find out that there's a methodology to get into a business pipeline where maybe they haven't been before, but I would sure like this to be part of a more comprehensive package.
As kind of a follow-up on that, thank you, Mr. Chair, as kind of a follow-up on that, I would want to see what the function of each agency towards the implementation of the plan really is. Because, I'm sitting here kind of thinking about it as the senator was talking. If somebody calls my office and says, how do I get access into this, I wouldn't have the first idea of who to call or anything else. But, you know, gosh, it would be really neat if we could say, oh, well, what you do is you call the Advocacy Commission's office, and they've got all the information, and they're going to be able to get you what you need.
Representative Crummell, I call Chip.
Well, I get maybe that's
Mr.
What
Chair,
to
so do many other people.
Maybe that's what I'll have to do, too.
Because I think, you know, that's absolutely correct, being able to get the information out to folks.
I'm just making your point. I mean,
thank you. Thanks for the help.
With all of the what you don't know, you just go to where you find the closest thing to the very top. You can get on the phone and let it start from there.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I also want to compliment the subcommittee in terms of the high level of debate and discussion around some of the other issues that we've brought before you previously. I mean, I think we've laid out in front of you the challenge that we have in ascribing performance measures for some of the key ingredients that are on this list. affirmative action, minority women, and emerging small businesses.
Chip,
yes.
Let me warn you that flattery will not necessarily get your budget approved.
It helps.
Mr. Chair, with that in hand, I do think, though, it illustrates the fact that these are some really difficult challenges that we've got to get our arms around, and I don't think that I don't think any of us can do it alone.
Thank you. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was debating whether I wanted to ask this or not, but do people tend to, say, someone who might have a specialty in some area of transportation, would they contact probably ODOT as opposed to another department and DCBS, somebody who has a more general contracting that they're looking at doing? I mean, is that how people are contacting government at this point, or is it even that easy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, that's an excellent question. I think it varies is the answer. There are many small businesses that just contact directly the agency that they think might most logically be their point of contact. From there, they are sometimes then referred to minority women or emerging small business. In other cases, they find out about opportunities through their own existing network, and that leads them in through the first door of minority women and emerging small businesses. So it really varies somewhat, which makes this all the more challenging.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to page 25 and the purpose for my flattery earlier. Office remodel, kidding. This is a $250,000 placeholder that begins a life cycle not for technology in this case, but for carpeting, fixtures and office furniture. And this is really sort of the beginnings of an office remodel, and the $250,000 is a placeholder figure. I want to emphasize that is not a hard dollar amount. Matter of fact, as you can see on this slide, the first phase is estimated a little over $200,000. And the carpet is something that we continually bring up. For those of you that have not had the, I think, really wonderful opportunity to come and visit or get a tour of the governor's offices, we'd be happy to oblige you. They are something to behold, and I'll probably just leave it at that.
Chip, in relationship to that, for those in the governor's office that have not had the opportunity to visit some of the offices in the House and Senate, I'm sure we would be able to arrange meetings and tours of those facilities as well for the members, for the governor himself, as a matter of fact, if he'd like to do that.
And
we would extend that invitation. Before we go on with this one, though, let me say the chair has one sort of minor problem here with this particular budget request, and that is that we've talked at some length, I think, in the subcommittee here about at other times with other agencies about the overall scheme of thing as far as planning for remodeling of perhaps this building and other buildings, and that we're some people are anticipating going in on Capitol Mall and et cetera, type of thing. And I don't want to ride Senator Johnson's horse too far on this, but she seems to me to be someone who's really concerned about not knowing exactly where we're going. She reminds me of the the famous United States Chief Justice Supreme Court, who was on a train one day as the conductor started down the aisle, and he started going through his clothes, obviously, looking for the ticket, the conductor came up and stood there for a minute or two and finally said, Mr. Chief Justice, that's okay. When we get home, we get back, why, you can get me your ticket a little bit later. And he said, young man, the problem is not where is my ticket. The problem is where are we going. The problem isn't your $250,000. The problem is where are we going. And so, yes.
Well said, Mr. Chair. I would make a case to have this comprehensive look. Conversely, there's some stuff in the governor's office that I just don't know how long it can wait. I was attending a press briefing in the governor's ceremonial office, and those steam heaters were so disruptive and making so much noise that I'm surprised that people could hear.
I thought that was by design.
Clearly, knowing where we're going with this building would be enormously helpful. But I think the whole suite of offices for the governor's office are looking kind of tired. At least some of our hearing rooms have had some refreshment. And up in that little rabbit warren of cubicles that suffices for the governor's protection unit and clerical support, and it just, that whole place looks kind of shabby. But again, I would very much subscribe to a theory of an overall plan and how it fits in with the redo of this building. I mean, there are those in this building that have cast a covetous eye on your space and would leave you the ceremonial office only. And if someone asked me to describe what's the plan for the redo of this building right now, I couldn't begin to tell anybody. But it certainly seems to me that this is the building of the people of the state of Oregon, and it just cries out for fixing up. I've had a couple of fast rounds with Mr. Henderson about what the plan is that has largely been hatched outside of the knowledge of those of us in the legislature, and it would certainly include the Secretary of State's office and the Treasurer's office and the Governor's office to know what are the space requirements, are there other opportunities on the mall with perhaps new buildings where some of the governor's staff could go. But this package notwithstanding, it just seems that now when you call the governor's office, he's got people patchworked all over the place. You can't get phone numbers where anybody can transfer to anybody if they're in another building. I just don't think we show very well to outsiders, and some of this would help.
That's the reason I called Chip.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I think that's well said. We are aware that there have been some conversations about sort of a broader remodel and fixing up of the building and other pieces. And I think in the absence of any movement there, as a tenant in this building, we do think that there are some things that need to be done and upgraded in the governor's office. Thus, the reason for this particular request.
Okay. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I tend to agree that there should be a comprehensive plan on this, but I do think that the governor's ceremonial office is something that we really need to treasure, whether or not we move everybody behind those doors or not. But this is the place that the visitors show up, and we're not doing a good job of taking care of that piece of it, actually a good portion of the Capitol itself. But I do think that somehow we need to make that a little bit more of a priority if we haven't already.
Okay. Go ahead.
Moving to slide 26, this is just a quick list of quality and efficiency improvements that we were asked to provide. The first one is really something we just covered on earlier today, actually developing an actual life cycle plan for technology investments so that things are turned over on a regular basis, that there's a logic to it, and that outdated equipment that is constantly breaking and becoming more and more expensive to fix goes by the wayside. The second really sort of quality and efficiency improvement, I think, is the establishment of the federal office that we discussed several days ago. This is because of the amount of federal dollars that the state leverages, I think, becoming a more and more vital asset to the state. We'd like to move more information onto the governor's website. That is a much less expensive way of communication than mailings and other pieces. So we think that that continues to be a place where we can expand and improve.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Chip, what prevents you now from moving more information onto the governor's website?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, nothing. We continue to do that. And I think if you took a look, if you'd done a sort of a quick analysis of the governor's website at the beginning of this administration versus where it is now, you would see a vast improvement. There is a huge amount of information now on the governor's website, and that is by design. We're constantly looking at ways of adding on to and streamlining that information to more make it more accessible.
I think that could be said for any of the state websites. So when I first got here in 99, Oregon was ranked pretty low by the National Center for Digital Government, and I think we have improved quite a bit. I don't know where we rank today, but I think we've improved quite a bit. So I guess that could be said for anything, but I was just wanting to make sure that there isn't anything that's preventing you from being able to do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, the one piece that I would say that makes it a challenge is actually the technology that we have in the office behind the scenes. In terms of actually doing HTML language and actually putting things, posting things on the website, because of the relative historical value of some of the computers in our office, it does just take longer. It is a bit of a challenge there. I've just been also handed a note, Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, that our office administrator is also our webmaster. Oh, right. So she's indicating that that's a challenge, and I would concur. Multitasking, shall we say.
Sounds like a small college.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember that. Multitasking.
Yeah. The next piece is really an efficiency that we are constantly striving for, actually the next two. Effective communication partnership with state agencies and groups of common issues or focus. Seems like sort of a common sense thing, but it's really, really vital, and takes an inordinate amount of work and an inordinate amount of focus to constantly look at ways of improving that communication partnership with the agencies. And then the last piece is the development of a correspondence tracking system, and I'd like to just pause here if I could. There is a huge need within the governor's office for, I think, a more comprehensive correspondence tracking system. Roughly, I'm going to guess, 3,000 a year? The governor's office has roughly about 30,000 communications a year into it, and many of these sort of run the entire spectrum, obviously, of requests from extremely personal, extremely dire, to sort of general inquiries and that sort of thing. Many of these are routed to agencies and are handled at that level, but many more are handled also at the senior policy level and by the governor himself at times. All of these need to be tracked and sort of carefully approached in terms of itemizing when they're responded to, what the response said, and making sure that Oregonians are getting quality follow-up every step of the way. From agencies or from the governor's office itself. The tracking system that we have currently is, for lack of a better description, band-aided together. It's nuts and bolts, and I think will require us in the governor's office to kind of go through and really take a sharp look at that as a way to really increase efficiency and communication as well as, I think, cost, frankly, down the line. Moving on to slide 27, we were also asked to sort of list the priorities within the governor's office, and I'll just sort of walk down these two. It's always a challenge anytime someone is requesting that you list them in priority order. The first one is the policy administrative functions of the governor's office. We believe those are absolutely critical to the function of the governor's office as executive of the state. Number two is the economic revitalization team. As you heard earlier, this really, as a statutory piece, really does enhance, I think, the connection between the state and the rest of the state. The third is the federal office, for the reasons that we outlined earlier and the huge amount of reliance that we have upon leveraging federal dollars and making sure that our priorities move forward. Fourth is minority women and emerging small business. Again, I think there is a way for us to really coordinate and capitalize on an interim discussion, as we just talked about here, to enhance that. The fifth is also statutory, the Affirmative Action Program. Six is arrest and return. Seventh is the Office of Rural Policy. And then the last.
I certainly appreciate the need for a federal office. The memory is, 37 states have?
35, Mr. Chair.
35, and some have nothing, and some do double duty somewhere. I look at a better part of $750,000, one FTE. I don't understand very well the costs in Washington, D.C. I understand when I go there, my Visa card takes an awful hit. Is this for office space? This one person, does this person make enough money that they don't need anymore to have any kind of support, clerical, what have you, staff there, and they answer the phone themselves, or help me with
Mr. Chair, this number here is all-encompassing, so it is for the single FTE. It is also for the rent and for the phone and for all the ancillary items that are required to support that individual. They do answer the phone themselves. Having said that, there is also some additional money within that that is set aside for support and clerical services should they be required. It's not very much, but it is some in there. So report generation, that sort of thing. In the event that it's necessary. And then in addition to that, as it was just pointed out to me, there is the $217,500 for the National Governors Association dues within that as well.
Okay. All right. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, my support for this package is conditioned on a couple of things. Knowing what other agencies have a presence in Washington, D.C., and you gave an explanation at the end of last week, Mr. Trujillo, about the value of having an employee versus having contract lobby services. And I know that the explanation... Well, I guess I don't know that the explanation... I explain that to me again.
Okay. So... Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, as you know, in any time you do contracting out, the contractors typically have more than just one set of clients. They typically juggle multiple clients is probably a safe estimation. Now, the counterbalance to that is typically they also have superb access and assuming excellent relations that allow for that good access to occur. From the perspective of the governor, the federal office and the federal affairs office really represents almost more than one interest within the state anyway. So the sort of amount of work that would come to this and the actual focus that it would take would be very, very sizable. And I think that we were fortunate in the person of Sarah Bittleman, we found someone who was actually able to not only have the access and have the ability to kind of move forward sort of a variety of agendas and have those relationships already pre-existing, but also doesn't have the challenge of actually working on other clients and is in all cases directly responsible and directly reporting to the governor.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
In anticipating a list of who all, what other agencies have a presence there, what I'm trying to figure out is, could you get enough critical mass to have the Oregon office so that there was some level of coordination? I know ODOT used to have, when I was there, a federal lobbyist. And I'm just trying to figure out that if we had enough critical mass, that having, being a big contract with an established firm, we would still have the level of personal attention that you need in dealing with these kinds of lobby issues, but perhaps more coordination. I have no idea how many lobbyists there are. ODOT was the only one that I knew of, and I'll be eager to see the list, but I'm just trying to figure out, could we get enough Oregon interest that we had an Oregon office, not a governor's office and a transportation office, and that's all I'm trying to figure out.
Right, and Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I think that's an excellent point. From the vantage point of the governor, this is the first effort to really try and coordinate all of those multiple voices within state government to make sure that clear priorities are established and that focus is delivered. Again, one of the complaints that we constantly heard from the congressional delegation is, wow, you know, we get a hit up for a lot of requests, whether it's appropriations or otherwise, from a whole host of agencies within state government. Which one are we supposed to really focus on right now? Which one are we supposed to elevate to a higher level? And those are kind of the debates and discussions that are occurring through this office right now.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So this would make I don't want to use names. So this would make the governor's lobby person the traffic cop? So that before ODOT would go, and I'm just making this up, but before ODOT would go advocate trying to place name a bridge in a federal bill, they would have to check with this office?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, this office isn't served to be the yes or no on those requests. This office is simply serving to amplify and enhance that effort. So ODOT would go ahead and make their request. And then the federal office, federal affairs office from the governor's office would then correspond that request to all of the other requests being made out of state government and would insert that in terms of a priority list and make sure that that got elevated to an appropriate level.
Well, one other thing that I am just going to grind on in my committee in the afternoon, the Economic Development and Transportation, is some coordinated series of lists that are price disciplined and have been through a public process at the county level so that we don't continue to confuse the situation. I think if Oregon spoke with an Oregon voice instead of Yamhill County going after something or Columbia County going after something, and we're trying to get a sewer in Vernonia place named in a bill through the efforts of the mayor and the city council, I will not consider this session a success unless there is some coordinated way to get all of that information amalgamated and into the hands of the people that are positioned in Washington to help us. And we don't have these needs and issues lists, and I want to figure out a mechanism to get them so that we at least have all of these, again, pockets of lobbying dealing with the same set of priorities. Otherwise, we could find ourselves bidding against ourselves if there's not some degree of coordination.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that is exactly the reason the Federal Affairs Office is so vital. I think you've just articulated the whole premise behind it very, very well.
Okay. Is that it?
We have one last slide.
Okay.
page 28, this is the 2% efficiencies that we were asked to come up with as well. So the proposal from the governor's office in the event that this is necessary, and would be to reduce one executive support staff position. Clearly, there is impact when you do this, and I think that impact would be felt very acutely in the governor's office. There's also, I think at that time we would also look at reducing services and supplies for the ERT. Given the fact that they are sort of located in regions around the state, it is a little more expensive and a little more costly to keep those offices going. So we would look at kind of cutting back some of those pieces. And then we would also look at reducing services and supplies for the affirmative action and the minority women emerging small businesses programs as well. So that would reduce the training budgets there probably.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I'm just trying to see the correlation between the two documents that you've given us, Governor's Office priorities, and you've listed 1 through 7, and then you've listed the places for cuts in the 2% efficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
And you're cutting the things that you value the most. Why would you do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, so the question is really why isn't the Office of Rural Policy on the
That's
list?
That's the obvious question, yeah.
Okay, so just cutting to the chase there. I think that from the perspective of the governor, Office of Rural Policy really does provide tremendous value in terms of actually hearing the voice of rural Oregon. I think that we constantly, within the governor's office, get outstanding information from rural Oregon through the Office of Rural Policy that elevate issues or de-escalate issues, as the case may be, in terms of the policy development that goes on within the governor's office. I think to eliminate the Office of Rural Policy would have, I think, a correspondingly negative impact on the rest of policy development within the governor's office. That is the reason we chose not to eliminate that. Instead, we looked at ways to sort of reduce costs in a fashion that wouldn't impede what we think of as some of the primary responsibilities of the governor's office, including policy development.
I was just trying to understand the logic of it.
Okay. We are ready for a work session. You got this planned for tomorrow?
Day after tomorrow, Mr. Chair.
Day after tomorrow. Okay. And what's our agenda tomorrow?
Tomorrow you'll be doing the Board of Accountancy. Okay. And actually, I fibbed.
Huh?
I fibbed.
Oh.
I cannot tell a lie.
We're not going to schedule for a work session day after tomorrow.
I didn't think so. Okay.
So, right. So
I thought we were postponed indefinitely.
Yes, sir.
On the governor's budget. So
right now we have nothing scheduled for Wednesday or Thursday?
That is correct.
I know that will be painful for you, too.
Extremely painful, Mr. Chair, but I'll try to deal with it.
Senator.
Subject to change.
Before you gavel us out, would you clarify in my mind that we are going to get a list of those various agencies within the state that are have a lobbying presence in Washington, D.C., and that those the extent of that, the manner in which the lobbying and the amount of money is being spent?
I would think that's on the agenda, yes. Chip.
Mr. Chair, Senator Woodson, I do want to say that our office is going to attempt by the end of the day to make sure that you do have a comprehensive list of all the federal lobbyists and liaisons from all the agencies.
You can have till tomorrow morning if you want, Chip.
You're very generous, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Would you get that to me, Chip? I'll give it to the members.
Thank you. Chip, to all of the staff who've been here from the governor's office, we appreciate your testimony. Our delay has nothing to do with the fact that we're not somewhat prepared to pass the budget out, but we have some items we want to look at, I think, a little more before we go down that road, and so we'll take a day or two to maybe try to do that, and then get back to us with when the work session will be. No other announcements for us?
Yes, sir.
We're adjourned. Whoops, missed the...